ignoring Gore. Let me see. Vic was depositing the rest of the automatic weapons in the bed of the bullet, and Eddie, being a male, was drawn to her. His next statement probably had to do more with the braggadocio of having his posse nearby than good sense. I'd rather she did it. Oh, you don't want that. I sopped up some of the blood and laid the skin flap back over his forehead. She's more likely to use it as an excuse to put you out of your misery. Or ours. My under-sheriff studied my handiwork as I patched the young man up. You're going to have a great scar. I sealed the wound with some gauze and tape. So you guys were the ones that set fire to the substation? He said nothing until Vic reached up and slapped him in the back of the head. Hey, that hurts! Talk, you little shit! He sighed. We overheard them and thought if we got the bit back that Lockhart would let us in on the deal. We didn't know anyone was in there, honest. What deal? He shrugged, and the sullen look returned to his face as he glanced around at his friends. We don't know. Eddie, playtime is over. I leaned on the side of the Chevy next to the Cheyenne Nation. And I need some information. He glanced at his buddies again. We're not telling you anything. Well, then, I'm going to arrest you. Edgar Lanier was the first to ask from the other side of the truck bed. We're not already arrested? Not yet, but if I do, it goes on your permanent record. What's a permanent record? I turned and looked at Henry. Doesn't seem to carry the weight it used to. He sighed. No, it does not. I glanced back to the wounded young man. How old are you, Eddie? 17? Vic breathed a response. Jesus. Eddie considered her. You know, you shouldn't blaspheme like that. Kiss my ass, Opie. The others laughed as I waved a hand in front of his face to get his attention back on me. I need some answers or people are going to get hurt. He gestured toward his wound with a bloody hand. I'm already hurt. Vic reached up and smacked the side of his head. Not near enough. Ow! I mean really hurt. I straightened and looked to the left. I know the main ranch headquarters is up this road, but that's not where Lockhart and his men are working, is it? He remained silent until Vic slapped him again. Ow! I looked at her and she shrugged. I'm Italian and I have brothers. I know how this works. Is it the road to the riot up here? Vic raised her hand again, and the kid winced. Yeah, to the right. I don't know what's there. They never let us go out that way. I nodded, looked at the two track that departed from the main road a good quarter of a mile farther, and then redirected my attention to the weapons I had confiscated. I reached in and plucked out one of the plastic cases, opened it, and looked at the rounds inside, each one as long as a cigar. Edgar was next to me again. What did the blue tips mean? I pulled one out and studied the deceptive pastel point at the business end of the 50-caliber round. Incendiary. What's that mean? The Cheyenne Nation's voice intoned beside me. It blows things up. You think locking up their shoes with their guns will keep them there? I can hope. Anyway, I didn't figure you wanted to volunteer for babysitting duty. We'd triangulated a route that would have us traipsing through the sagebrush and over uneven ground, but would intercept the road by angling to the right. Are there snakes out here? It's Wyoming. There are snakes everywhere. If you see one, shoot it with your ray gun. Vic had taken a spacey-looking desert tan FN carbine and was aiming it at the horizon. And if you don't watch where you're going, you're going to step on one. She turned back to look at me. You're just jealous because mine weighs less than an anvil. Why did you decide to pack that thing anyway? Loaded with the Macmillan TAC 50 and 30 rounds of ammunition I'd dumped in a canvas satchel, I was bringing up the rear. If these guys are as well-armed as I think they are, I'd just as soon do my fighting from a couple of football fields away. Henry glanced back from point, my shotgun hanging from his shoulder and the Armalite A4 carbine with two 30-round magazines in his hand. More like a couple of miles. I called out to him, if they'd had a flintlock rifle, would you have taken it? He walked on. I like this weapon. It and I have spent a great deal of quality time together. Quality of life? For me, perhaps not for others. There was a chill, but maybe it was the cool of the late night. I thought about the idiocy of what I was doing, pitting the three of us against who knew how many. The proper thing to do would have been to call in the highway patrol and as many fellow sheriffs and deputies as I could draw on short notice from the surrounding counties. But here I was, lugging my deuce across the high plains in a remake of They Came to Cordura. Short notice was still too long, and these characters were too powerful to let slip away. After Double Tough, I thought I couldn't allow it, but after Freimeyer, I knew I couldn't. It was possible that Lockhart and the others had already vacated to sunnier pastures, but I figured they were concerned with removing anything that might incriminate them. If I opened the conflict to a wider arena, the more opportunities there would be that they might slip through. Maybe I just wanted to mess things up for them myself, get my licks in before anybody else showed up. I figured that Gloss, the others, the lawyers, and possibly the National Guard couldn't be too far behind, but I wanted to make sure that none of the nastier players got away, and certainly not scot-free. I stumbled over a berm of loose dirt and noticed that we'd gotten to the road. Henry was crouched down, running his hands over the hard-packed earth.
Heavy equipment, and a lot of it.
I nodded, and sat the butt end of the TAC 50 on the road, and sloughed off the satchel full of brass.
I wish we had a truck. People in hell want ice water.
Vic propped the FN on her hip and glanced around.
I wish we had air support.
The Cheyenne Nation continued to look down the dirt road, where it rounded off at the flats and disappeared into a small valley. His face pivoted to the mountains and the morning star, likely thinking the same thing I was, that out here on the flat was a bad place to be without food, water, or much of anything else besides guns. He gestured toward the big rifle I carried, and more important, the Night Force NXS mil-dot telescopic sight.
Something?
He nodded, and pointed down the dusty road, stretching like the hypotenuse of an extended triangle that disappeared at the vanishing point. I brought the burly rifle up, and adjusted the optics till a man vaulted into clear view, a lean bundle of muscle with dark hair who sat in a lawn chair with an umbrella and a cooler behind a Jeep Rubicon, an autoloader rifle lying across his lap. Lowering the 50, I handed it to Henry and watched as he scoped the individual almost a mile away.
How the hell did you see him?
He sighed and handed the weapon back to me.
Cheyenne radar.
Then he lifted the binoculars that I hadn't seen hanging at his chest and handed them to Vic.
And these?
Advance guard.
Yes.
I glanced around at the infinite space, at the sagebrush and the moon shadows of the few large rocks studding the landscape.
Too long to go around him. Any ideas?
The bear nodded.
Yes. Shoot him.
He might just be some roughneck they've got working for them.
All the more reason.
I looked down at the howitzer in my hands. Too much noise. Vic handed me the FN before taking off her duty belt and uniform shirt. Underneath, she was wearing a white wife-beater T-shirt, which highlighted portions of her anatomy. She ripped the front to show a little more cleavage, and, adjusting her attributes, she flipped me her cap. She shook her head, and her exquisite face was haloed with her hair. Presto, instant print model. She tucked the Glock in the back of her jeans and started off with a swagger.
Watch and learn, fuckers.
I had every intention. A few yards down the road, she latched a hand onto her hip and turned to look back at us en vogue.
Not that I'm a sore loser, but if he should happen to shoot me, take his head off.
We watched as she continued walking down the middle of the road in a heart-jarring strut. I looked at Henry, now standing beside me.
Why didn't I think of that?
You do not have the legs for it.
We moved in a little closer and then set the TAC 50 up on a flat rock the size of a toppled refrigerator. I pulled the bolt action, replaced the incendiary round with a regular one, and handed the blue tip to the Cheyenne Nation.
Don't lose that. I've only got 12 of them.
He raised an eyebrow and dropped the 50 in his shirt pocket. I brought the bolt forward and set the round, lowered my face to the scope as he sat on the edge of the rust-colored, lichen-covered rock and raised the night-vision binoculars. $20 says she takes him without a shot. He snorted,
no bet.
Through the crosshairs, I watched as the makeshift sentry stood at her approach still holding the FN, not unlike Vic's, except this one was olive drab. I also noticed he had an auto loader with silencer stuffed in a holster.
630 yards?
625.
I adjusted the scope and watched the winds blowing dust across the roadway in different directions at different distances.
Strong latitudinal wind at about 400 yards.
I can see that. Vic held her hands up in mock surrender as the man cradled the Spec Ops rifle in his hands. She stopped at a respectful distance, and I could even see her jaw muscles through the scope as she spoke. He said something back, and she cocked a leg in a provocative manner, her hands going to her hips. He smiled broadly, pushing his ball cap up onto his head, turned, and balanced the rifle on the top of the spare of the Jeep. Cracking open the cooler, he fished out a bottle of water for her. The smile was even broader when he turned, but quickly faded when confronted with the 9mm in his face.
Does it work every time?
She tucked her uniform shirt back into her jeans. Not with homosexuals. I had unbolted the spare from the Wrangler and had handcuffed the dark-haired guy to it and to the chair. He still watched Vic with considerable interest.
Please tell me she's really a deputy.
I looked back at the Botticelli Venus with a badge, now buckling her duty belt, reholstering the Glock and stuffing his pistol with the silencer in her own jeans. She is.
I was just sitting here thinking that this job wasn't bad, and the only thing I needed was...
I looked at the Minnesota plates on the Jeep.
Who are you? Name's Chet Carlson.
He started to extend his hand for a shake and then remembered his situation.
Had a buddy get a hold of me, said there was a welding job in Wyoming. When I got here, they had enough welders, so I took this.
Did you know it was illegal?
No.
He thought about it. Does it matter?
Probably not. I looked down the road less traveled. Did they tell you to kill anybody that came in?
He shrugged.
They said stop anybody, and they weren't real particular about how I was supposed to do it.
He glanced at Henry standing there, holding the TAC-50.
I think I'm glad it didn't come to that. I don't think that 223 or 40 of mine would hold up against that anti-aircraft weapon.
Military?
Afghanistan, 2 tours.
Lockhart hire you?
He did. Said it was a government job, real hush-hush. But when I got here, I could see that that was bullshit, but I stayed. Gotta eat, man.
My eyes returned to the road. Down there, what are they doing? He made a face and then looked at Henry and Vic, who had both drawn near.
Oil. Black gold. Texas tea. They got that Mexican with them, and he's a damned oil magnet. If he can't find it, it ain't there.
I thought this area was pumped out.
He shook his head. Not with the new technologies with horizontal drilling and fracking. At $100 a barrel, they're pulling quite a bit out down there, but it's just a sideline. I heard one of them, that Lockhart guy, he said this is just the tip of the iceberg and that something really big was coming.
What's that?
He didn't say.
I sighed. We need the keys to your Jeep. He reached across with his free hand and pulled them from his jeans, then tossed them to me.
Here.
We're taking some water. Here's a couple for you.
Take all you want. Just make sure you tell them where you left me.
I smiled. Don't worry. We won't forget about you.
That's not what worries me.
He looked down the road this time.
You go down there, and they're going to kill your ass.
I tossed the keys in my hand as I took the 50 from Henry. My ass takes a lot of killing. But thanks for the vote of confidence. The top was down on the Rubicon. Only a man from Minnesota would think this was top-down weather. And we didn't bother with trying to put it up. In my experience, it took 12 men, a boy, and a week to do the job. There was just enough light to drive without the headlights, so I did. Henry stood in the back, periodically checking the horizon with the binoculars, with his arms draped over the padded roll bar.
Anything?
Just the unfurling and pastoral beauty that is Wyoming.
I glanced at Vic.
Forever west? No fucking way.
The slope gradually led to a shallow valley that headed south, so I followed the wide dirt road and tried not to look off the edge that dropped into a tributary of Salt Creek. Despite Vic's remarks, it was beautiful country. Even the tang of turned earth where they had graded the road couldn't spoil the environs. There were pillars of rock ahead, and what looked like another canyon that dropped off farther into the narrow aperture to the west like sentinels into an ancient sea, a place from which humidity had departed forever. The moon was setting, pulling at tides that were no longer here,
but you could feel the buoyancy of its light as it struck the rocks. I noticed a batch of sage and tumbleweeds to my right and slowed. It looked like the entrance to a road that they had cut and then abandoned, but it was worth an investigation. I slowed the jeep and pulled up to the somewhat hidden fork. Henry climbed out with the Armalite and looked at the brush alongside the road. Carefully, he reached down and took hold of one of the branches and pulled it. The rest of the vegetation pivoted along with its brethren, evidently wired together. He looked back and motioned for me to drive through, which I did, and then pulled to the side. He walked over and made a cutting gesture at his throat, and I shut off the engine. His head was cocked, as if he were listening to something. I glanced at Vic, and we both climbed out and followed the bear down the road toward the sound of heavy equipment. The noise echoed off the rock walls of the steep canyon, and it must have been an undertaking to put the road in. Evidently, they had thought it would be worth it. We turned a sharp corner, and suddenly, far below, there was a city. The usual lights and illumination that generally accompanied a drilling operation were not there, and the entire drilling rig and outlying buildings were painted a flat desert tan. It was an operation, a big one, and in spite of the camouflage pattern, I was still amazed that no one had noticed it. "How the hell do you keep something like this from being seen?" The Cheyenne Nation started to speak, but then looked up. I followed his eyes. There were no stars and no setting moon. I allowed mine to adjust to the darkness and could see what was blocking the sky, a mesh of guide wires running across the distance of the canyon, interlaced with ghillie material, more than a mile of it.
"Holy crap!" Vic stepped forward, looking at the gigantic canopy. "I'm impressed."
I made a noise in my throat. "But how do you get the oil out of here?" The bear's hand came up and pointed at a number of polished aluminum shapes parked against the base of the drilling rig, looking incongruous amid the military paint scheme. I took his binoculars and could see the milk trucks being filled with the last tankers full of oil. I'll be damned. I passed the binoculars to Vic and stood there, taking in the magnitude of the operation, unsure of what to do next. She surveyed the entire scene.
"I don't get it, though. They can't be making enough money to support all of this long term. What's the next step?"
"I don't know."
Henry's voice sounded from the darkness.
"It looks to me like they are breaking things down and loading up just a few more tankers. I am betting they will be out of here by morning. Just leave behind a skeleton crew to dynamite the canyon, and nobody but us will be the wiser."
Vic nodded her head. "Smart."
I nodded. "Very smart." The bear remained silent for a moment and shook his head. "Not so smart."
We turned and looked at him as he pointed at the road on which we stood.
"Only one way out."
Chapter 15. The milk truck driver wasn't sure what to make of the shapely woman standing in front of the jeep with the hood up near where the first sentry had been positioned. But he knew what to make of the .45 Colt I poked through the driver's side window into his left ear. As I cuffed him to the jeep's spare along with Carlson, I started having second thoughts and figured maybe we should find something larger to pin them to. I turned to Henry. "Do we need the jeep anymore?"
"For speedy egress, possibly.
If I cuff both of these guys to the spare, they could just pick it up and walk off with it." Vic looked around as she closed the hood on the Rubicon. "Where the hell would they go?" She had a point. I turned back and looked at the two of them, the one from Minnesota, the other from Louisiana.
"You guys aren't that stupid, are you?"
They looked at each other and then back to me, their faces blank, and I was not reassured.
"Look, there isn't much out here that can eat you, but what can eat you is the distance, okay? If the two of you go on walking about in the dark, you're likely to get hurt or, more important, get lost, and then you'll just be two corpses handcuffed to a spare tire. Another great mystery of the high plains. Got me?"
They looked around again. I was still not reassured.
I threw a thumb toward my undersheriff. "Or I will let her shoot you."
They seemed to get that last part. I joined the squad back on the road, sighed deeply, and thought what a nice cool morning it was if you weren't up to the types of things we were up to. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one who knows how to drive this thing. I studied the length of the milk truck and made some calculations. The bear stiffened and shook his head.
You are also the better shot.
I glanced at the 18-wheeler. It's a tanker. I think you'll hit it. He nodded reluctantly.
So what is going to happen?
On Highway 1 in Vietnam, I saw a tracer around hit an oil truck. Vic leaned forward into my line of thought. And?
Well, it was aircraft fuel, not crude. They both stared at me. And it was more than one tracer, probably a bunch of them. They continued to stare at me. But it blew like a sailor on a 3-day drunk.
The bear's voice rumbled,
How many claymores?
Since Vietnam and our association with Claymore directional mines, Henry and I had developed our own private method of determining a demolition scale. 8. His eyes quickly traveled from Vic's to mine. 8. Maybe 7, but that was high octane with lots of tracers. He raised an eyebrow, the closest thing the Cheyenne Nation did to a guffaw.
The concussion will collapse the canyon.
It's crude oil. Won't be anywhere near that bad. Vic stretched a hand out and placed it on my arm. How about we simply jackknife the trailer on the road?
We'll fall into the creek. I think I'd rather blow it up and have them have to put it out. And I want a lot of smoke and noise.
I reached over and tapped the extended barrel of the TAC-50. One blue point from this should do that. Henry still looked worried. I don't want anyone killed. Just want to plug the bottle until we can get the weight of the law to swing to our side. Our attention was drawn to two individuals carrying a spare tire between them. I guess they were that stupid. Hey, where do you two idiots think you're going? The Cajun was the first to answer. I was looking to see if there was another lawn chair in the Jeep. The Minnesotan was next, and his tone was a little indignant as he pointed toward the cooler. We're out of water and figured we'd get a drink. Is that okay? My undersheriff made an exasperated sound, yanked the silenced S&W she'd taken from Carlson, and fired a round into the cooler. The two men might as well have been statues. Still life, roughnecks with spare. No, it's not all right. You are under arrest, and you need to sit down, now. They did, and quick. The Cheyenne Nation continued to look at me.
Shoot one of them in the foot.
Don't encourage her. He glanced at the Kenworth, still patiently idling in the roadway, pointed in the wrong direction.
Why you?
I told you.
Tell me. Vic joined him in the interrogation, her eyes as angry as one of those snakes she so disliked. Why you?
I thought about it. It's my stupid idea, and if anybody's going to get killed doing it, I'd just as soon it not be either of you.
I set the muscles in my jaw. Also, I want Lockhart. The Cheyenne Nation shook his head.
That I can do better.
I want him alive.
Why?
Because we're better than they are. He snorted.
I suppose we are about to find out if that is true.
Vic still didn't look convinced. But if they start shooting, we shoot back, right?
I don't think they're that stupid.
Well, you didn't think those morons were that stupid either. Let's do the math, shall we? She cut her off on her fingers. Desperate plus guns equals stupid. I'm betting that the majority of the guys down there are just hired hands, brought in and told to keep their mouths shut. Her lips stiffened. Maybe. But then there's Freimeyer.
I added. And then there's Bidarte.
In all actuality, the Kenworth had an 8-ball suicide knob and an automatic transmission. But I didn't see any reason to share that information with the rest of the crew. I had to drive the fully loaded tanker down to the T in the road before being able to turn it around, but reassured myself by seeing that the blockaded youths were still hanging around the disabled vehicles. I pulled the chain and sounded my horn as I turned, watching as they waved. I throttled up the big tanker and started back down the road, pulling up and stopping to get Henry. He stepped onto the running board and shouted to be heard above the diesel engine,
"We could still call in the Highway Patrol and the Natrona County Sheriff's Department."
I nodded. We will, but first I want those hornets in a bottle.
You will be in the front of the tanker when it explodes. You will be trapped with them in that bottle.
I'm hoping to be out of the truck and a little ways down the road when the truck explodes.
Signal?
I smiled. Me running for my life from this damn truck.
Perhaps something more specific?
I thought about it and remembered being told by a Special Forces colonel that in these situations a two-part signal was best so as to not inadvertently tip the shot. I'll push my hat up and scratch the back of my neck.
He nodded. They will see you coming and wonder why the truck has turned around.
I'm counting on that.
They will shoot you.
Not until they know what's going on. The eyebrow again.
Maybe, brother. Maybe.
Lockhart will want to parley.
And Bedarte?
Indicating that I was ready to go, I shrugged and put my hands on the wheel. If he comes near me with that knife of his, you have my permission to shoot his arm off. Vic swung the jeep out onto the road and pulled in front of the truck as he finally grunted a laugh.
Deal.
I watched as she turned her classic profile to look at us. Keep an eye on her, Henry. He turned his head to regard my undersheriff. Does she seem a little emotional to you lately?
She is worried about you.
I batted my eyelashes at him.
Aren't you worried about me?
A full laugh.
No. I have this Macmillan Tac 50.
He stuck his hand out and waited as I gripped him back. Pax? I nodded into the glint in his eyes, perfectly confident that if things went completely wrong, it would be me and not the Cheyenne Nation that screwed the pooch.
Pax.
The Kenworth was an older model but rode nicely on the hard pack, and in no time we were at the cutoff to the canyon. Vic pulled past as Henry jumped out, pulling the brush away. I flipped off the headlights so that they wouldn't reflect from the rock walls of the canyon, unconcerned with the noise of the engine since the machinery associated with the clandestine rig would mask that until the last moment. It was quite possible that I wouldn't have to detonate the tanker, that parking it in the middle of the one-lane road and stuffing the keys in my pocket or tossing them into Sulphur Creek far below would be enough. I was hoping that was the case, but it was also possible that Lockhart and Bedarte and a few of the others were desperate enough to avoid prison that they would rather kill some no-name sheriff than serve time, or worse. Lockhart, I was sure, would try and negotiate. But Bedarte, looking at a lifelong Jolton Rawlins at the least, was another matter. I took a certain comfort in watching the jeep swing around. Henry walked up and stood on my running board with the 50 in his hand. I inched my way down the incline toward the only major curve in the road and a pavilion of sharp-edged rocks that would provide good cover and a magnificent shooting position. I pulled alongside the boulders, and he stepped off the running board with the Macmillan and the canvas bag of ammo. I watched as he picked the exact spot I would have, another rock like the one before, although this one looked more like a chest freezer, that was angled a little downward with a protective shield of rubble in front. He began setting up the bipod for the big magazine-fed bolt action, and I watched as he loaded the weapon with the blue-tip incendiary rounds. I guess he figured that an incendiary would take Bedarte's arm off as well as a regular one. Vic appeared in the window with the binoculars around her neck, her disparagement in full bloom. I looked at her and noticed that her hair was longer and even had a few butterscotch streaks left over from the summer. "Do you dye your hair?" She shook her head at me. "That's what you're thinking about right now?" "I guess." She folded her arms on the sill and averted her gaze. "Yes, I dye my hair in hopes that you might someday notice." "I notice your hair and the rest of you to the point of distraction." The tarnished gold eyes came back to mine and stayed there. "So, where are we?"
"What?
You and me, where are we?" I waited a moment before making the next statement.
"You want to talk about that now?"
"You brought it up." I smiled and fiddled with the eight ball on the steering wheel. "I'm trying, kiddo. You once said that you didn't want hearth and home, and to do like you said and take one day at a time. I'm attempting to adjust to that, but it's hard for an old dog to learn new tricks."
"Yeah, well, that may have changed," she sighed. "I'm thinking that I love you and don't want to share you with the rest of the populace."
I stared at her, and it was like the world had stopped on its axis.
"Are you proposing to me?"
"No, dumbass. I'm trying to get you to propose to me." She looked down the length of the Kenworth's hood in the direction of the rock cornice and the disappearing road.
get as far away from this damn thing as you can before playing with your head and neck, okay?
I am always careful when playing with my neck.
Sure you are.
She watched Henry make the last adjustments on the Macmillan and arrange the rounds within easy reach like not-so-small soldiers standing at attention. He rolled over on the rock to look at us with a downturned palm to the chest and a fist. I turned back to my undersheriff, thinking about the things she'd just said.
You spotting?
I am. You got a problem with that?
Don't shoot until I say so.
Her lips kicked sideways, and she studied the suicide knob on the steering wheel of the Kenworth.
They shoot you. I'm having the bear unload into every flammable piece of equipment down there, and then I'm shooting every single motherfucker that tries to crawl out of this burning hole.
She turned back to look at me, and I could feel the warmth of her breath on my ear.
So for the sake of population density and your future relationship, don't get killed.
I promise to do my level-headed best.
She reached over and grabbed my chin, pulling my mouth toward hers.
You never had a level-headed day in your life.
She tasted like bottled water, sweat, and the slight tang of metal that was probably the uncertainty in both our mouths.
She tasted good.
She raked her nails across my jaw as she released me, and I was pretty sure there were fire trails there marking my flesh.
Do not confuse that with a goodbye kiss.
She stepped off the running board, and I watched as she swung the Desert Tan FN carbine onto her shoulder. She blew me a kiss with a smile at the end of it.
Hit the road, Jack.
I let off the air brakes and inched forward.